You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you have a great weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not, and it has to get done, it must get done, and you have to do it, and you will. You ain't going to procrastinate. You ain't going to have somebody else who's incompetent try to do it. No, you're going to do it because it must be done. That's right. Get her done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But, of course, if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that, and there will be a drop down, and then you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m., from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jahad Ahmed. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then that's followed by Conversations, Reparations from 9 to 10 with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan from 7 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening, brothers and sisters, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. Saturday from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa, the Elders Council, the Sankofa Elders Council from 7 to 9 on Saturday. Sunday at 7 p.m. on Sunday, once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I'll be right back. You have a listen to a little music right quick. I have to make a run. So, be right back.
Hey, on a solo. We'll be right back.
welcome back once again, brothers and sisters. I appreciate that. Had to take care of some business. You know how that goes. All right, where are we at? Okay, we made those announcements. So now we're here to We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Taiemba, Africa for the Africans. He's preparing once again to take our people to Senegal and Gambia, April 2nd through April 12th. April 2nd to April 12th. And then in May 24th to June 5th to Ghana. Then November 18th through the 29th of November, Tanzania. And then December 24th to January 5th to Ghana. Contact Brother Bomani. All of these trips are $3,700 per person. You can put a deposit down, $400, and put pay on it. By the time that trip comes up, you'll be ready to go to a trip of a lifetime. And everything you need is on the website, the documentation, information that you need, the shots you need, all those things are right there to help you. The visa information, all of those things are right there to help you. So give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Africa for the Africans.org. Go to AfricanForTheAfricans.org. Baba Rinoco. Nothing yet from Baba Rinoco in terms of another Zoom conference, but we'll keep you posted. Habashah, HabashahIncorporated.org. Habashah, they are doing the work. Habashah stands for helping Africans by establishing schools at home and abroad. HabashahIncorporated.org. And the Kashi Project going on in Ghana, the things they do locally here in Africa, Habashah Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, and Golden Growers, and Urban Green Jobs, all of those positive things. Go to HabashahIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group, theledgegroup.com, Ledge, land for the environmental development of group economics. Man, I'm having trouble talking today. I don't know what it is. Get it together. Land for the environmental development of group economics. And of course, they deal in the four areas of people sustaining people activity, food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects in 6 countries and over 170 people employed and 260 members need more members. That's the Ledge Group. Bibi Atumi. ABIBITUMI, BBATUMI. Go to BBATUMI.com. They have a program tomorrow, African Centered Consciousness, African Peripheral Behavior, and Why We Have Made So Little Progress. That is tomorrow morning for us here. The time he gives is time that would be happening in Ghana, which is 5 hours ahead of us. So you're looking at 9 a.m. tomorrow, 9 a.m. here in the East, 8 a.m. Central, 7 in Mountain, or 6 in the Pacific. It's a 3-hour program. And what they're going to be dealing with in the presentation, Baba Kamal Kamban and his son, Obadeli Kamban, discuss what happened when our goal was to raise consciousness rather than raising behavior. The lopsided effect that led to the those who may appear to have African-centered thought and even African-centered speech, but the behavior is anything but African-centered. What kind of food do we eat? What kind of house do we live? And how do we live? What kind of language do we speak to our children? This talk will frame the rhetorical ethic in the context of aggressive ideological mimicry, whereby nothing, not everything, is what it seems. Moreover, we'll discuss African-centered schools that have become factories to churn out workers for building the Caucasian nation rather than the African nation. Finally, the presentation will address the forgery in terms of why we have made so little progress and the way forward for making substantiated intergenerational progress toward building the African nation by moving beyond fundamental alienation toward fundamental interrelationships. That's right. That's tomorrow. Bibi Atumi. Please, brothers and sisters, go to the website bibiatumi.com. Become a member of Bibi Atumi. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. A lot of good things, especially on Saturday. They have vegan food being served. They have all kinds of good stuff at Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located at 878 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. And the number to call is 404-444-1635. That's 404-444-1635. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia is open now. She's on the main thoroughfare there in Greenbrier Mall. And the number to call is 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. She has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, t-shirts, and all kinds of good stuff, figurines and everything. Give my sister a call. If there's a book that you're looking for, she doesn't have it, believe me, she'll get it. And so will Gazimde Ajamu at the Black Dot Cultural Center Bookstore in Ithonia. Give my good brother Gazimde Ajamu a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. He has a coffee bar now with delicious varieties of teas and, of course, that delicious Cameroon Boyo. So give my good brother a call. That's right. Give him a call at 404-519-8107. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. The Thursday night broadcast last night had a conversation with my dear sister, Dr. Baina Bello, on Us Lifting Us. You know, Dr. Baina Bello from Haiti, just a dynamic sister, beautiful sister. And every Thursday night from 9 to 10 on Blog Talk Radio, go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The program is called Dare to Win, and that's Us Lifting Us Thursday night broadcast. If you want to listen, dial 929-477-2789. Even if you want to make comments or questions, you can hit 1 and it'll put you in the queue that you can ask your questions or comments. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop, located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. If you want more information, contact my sister Shelly, brother Kinwardo, at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. That's Sun Goddess Sense. I'm going to get a line of their products so I can let you know all the stuff they do. I know they have that nice stuff to groom your beard, and they have it looking all shiny and healthy and so forth. Yeah, they got that. They make the product in various scents. So, you know, Gabriel Aurelia in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Sanjay-Haiti. Brothers and sisters, go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E-Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Akaban Institute, Baba Baruti, Mama Ya Baruti, please make your check of money or order out to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310, or use Cash App or PayPal. On a Cash App, $ YAA, the letter M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And you can make your donation monthly. Very much helpful. You know it is. Ackerman Institute. Also, two brothers and sisters, you know that Baba Baruti is a prolific writer. In fact, I'm going to be reading from the Inye Sesem in a minute, literally. And so I'm saying, if you want this book and others, go to Ackerman House, AckermanHouse.com, and you can buy, just look at what you like and purchase one of Baba Baruti's books. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. March 4th. One's character is the complexity of mental and spiritual traits which mark a people, and is a detectable expression has evidence of their ability to transmit their own heredity information. If we're not passing to the next generation of African children the essence of what it is to be African, we have no character. Nana Kweku Brokaw, Dr. Wade Nobles. Warriors have character, beautiful, uncompromising, tradition-grounded character. They know who they are. Therefore, they know who we are. They know what to do. They know what to expect of themselves, as well as those claiming warriorhood, because they measure themselves against anything but the best of who we are. Equally so, they know the mind of the menticidal. They are mindful of those who lavish themselves with menticide and wreak havoc on the front line with a genius Cointel Pro could never imagine. Warriors know the menticide within. They know their battles within as well as the enemy without. It is this knowing which has crafted their character in our favor. We know that warriors are not perfect. They say they are. But order to lift them up so they can be torn down is a sorry, childish, weak critique, because obviously no one is perfect. The quality of one's character is not a measurement of how close or far one is from perfection. The quality of one's character is a measurement of the effort one places in becoming human, in correcting the imbalance within themselves and in turn this world. All things considered, warriors possess the best of African character, and it is most evident in the energy they place in sometimes, brothers and sisters, I just can't get it out. Cultural education and those coming behind them. Warriors cultivate genius. That's what they do. They cultivate genius. Affirm, I have character. Affirm, I have character. Man, I can't get it. Sometimes I can't get it. But, you know, politicking, politicized. Yeah, political. Yeah. Okay. March 5th. Punish those who deserve punishment, and none will equal your righteousness. The Hosea. They wear the mask that smiles and spies. It hides their terror and disarms their lies. This murderous rage they hide is so, oh, so foul. With heartless abandon, they falsely smile. And conspire has won in stealth. Why wouldn't the world know of their crimes, the sins, the insults, the unredeemable wrongs? No, they cannot allow honest revelation while they wear the mask. This project, self-hated, making sacrificial ties to their dead gods in the caves on high. They proclaim a collective pain, the burden of harnessing and civilizing the undarkened. Reign until they no longer have to wear the mask. Affirm, I soundly punish those who deserve correction in a way that they will be unable to commit wrongs again. Affirm, I soundly punish those who deserve correction in a way that they will be unable to commit wrongs again. March 6th. To compliment, a compliment to you is, at the same time a compliment to me. Your beauty and style are also my beauty and style because you reflect me. We are one. We are one. That's right. We have to learn to be able to give and accept praise and deserve flattery without readily assuming that the giver is trying to get into our pockets or into our bed. Loving people compliment each other. They thrive by making each other feel good about themselves. Baba Mwalimu K. Bomani Baruti. Baba Baruti. African sovereignty cannot come into the world where the measurement of relationships is based on who can get what from whom and not what can be reciprocally given through without expectations of return. Where compliments are an insult or at a minimum suspect unless there is some personal benefit. Where there is no respect without agreement or force. Where morals are based on an immoral popularity and not righteous tradition. Where character is a role in a movie without character. Affirm. I compliment those who reflect me. Affirm. I compliment those who reflect me. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I would, of course, as I've been reading, if you've been following along, you know it deals a lot with warriorhood. This is the warriorhood edition because why? We need warriors. We need warriors, family. No doubt about it. We need warriors. So, man, I tell you, I'm telling you, it's Friday, right? Thank God it's Friday. Thank God it's Friday. Yeah. Trying to get my my brother here, Brother Akil Parker. Good morning, Brother Akil. Good morning, Brother Akil. That's not the one. Okay, I'm gonna. Good morning, Brother Akil. Okay. Well, once again, if you're on, just hit star twice and we can have the conversation. Still waiting for my brother Akil Parker to join me. We're going to talk today about the Tulsa massacre. I don't call it a race riot. There is no such thing as race. Europeans created the idea and the concept of race, giving themselves a top position with everybody else. There's my good brother, Brother Akil Parker. Good afternoon. Or good morning. Excuse me. Peace. How you doing today?
All right.
Good. Good. Are you ready for the discussion?
Definitely.
Okay. Definitely ready. So am I, my brother. So am I. You know, one of the things about this discussion about the Tulsa massacre, which is, that to me is just should be the heading, the Tulsa massacre. I was just making a point about calling it a race riot. You know, race, there is no such thing as race. Although it was a massacre perpetrated by Europeans, the Caucasians in the city of Tulsa, and vamping on a very prosperous and self-contained community where the money in that community circulated for months. The money in that community circulated for months. Okay. And so, you know, the envy, the jealousy, the mean-spiritedness and the hatefulness of Caucasians, you know. Akil, is that you? Is that the baby?
Yeah, that's just Kwame in the background. He's trying to chime in, put in his two cents.
Okay, man. Okay. And so we have to discuss this. I I had an opportunity to go to Tulsa last year, right before the COVID hit big time here. Mm-hmm. So I went to Tulsa and had a great tour by Brother Chief Igumawali. And he was on the program last year, and I'm going to have him on the program again this year. I saw a piece about what's going to be happening in Tulsa because, you know, it started on the, May 31st, but May 31st is at the beginning of the following week. So that weekend of the 28th, 29th, 30th is what's going to be happening. There's going to be a number of activities going to be happening in Tulsa. But one of them is, Franklin. Oh, man, the historian. John Hope Franklin.
Oh, John Franklin.
John Hope Franklin. He lived through that. He's from Tulsa.
Yeah.
And so they're having a seminar in his honor, but that's not the one that I would suggest that we deal with because, and I'm saying it's expensive, but that costs some serious money if you want to attend personally or even if you want to attend on Zoom or a webinar, whatever, you know. But I'm talking about the one that's dealing with the community because when I went to Tulsa, seeing the Vernon Baptist Church or Vernon AME Church, you know, where the brothers and sisters, some of them were saved because of that church, you know, and they had service even though the church burned down. But, you know, and then across the street is the center that was built and there's a house on that property that was moved from the area because not all the homes in Tulsa burned down. Some very nice homes, about I would say maybe 1,000 of them. I mean, man, 10 square blocks, that's a lot of damage and a lot of, you know, destruction that the Caucasians did to that community, you know. But they have a center there, right there in the Greenwood area, and that's to me is going to be the tour and the information given out that is more pertinent for us, as opposed to you know, because the reality is that it is their perspective, and then there's our perspective,
right?
And I would hope that we will want to listen to our perspective, you know.
Right. And I mean, you know, the same event can take place and there can be multiple perspectives, you know, because different people experienced it in very different ways. Mm-hmm. And I hope that there's not just a lot of basically trauma porn for a profit, you know, mm-hmm. you know, you're like to, you know, commit acts of genocide and then years later act apologetic about it. And then, make money off of the remembrance, you know.
Right.
Like it's kind of like, you know, if they don't get you in the wash, they get you in the rinse. You know, they're gonna make money regardless.
Right.
You know, either if I play the, you know, the white guilt role and say, oh, you know, I'm sorry for what my people did to you 100 years ago, and you know, here we're doing this event, you know, pay some money or you know, donate some money mm-hmm. so we can, you know, have this event. I hope that it's not that. Even though it probably, depending on who's organizing it.
Right.
So it's always going to be right. some degree of that. Because that's just the American way.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of our experiences as people are often classified as just, you know, it's almost like, it's like, you know, boys will be boys thing. Or it's like, you know, we just had so many challenges as, you know, trying to put together this American project and this American democracy. And there's so many different, you know, we had these internal conflicts, and it's like our humanity is just becomes a footnote, mm-hmm. and our humanity almost becomes dismissed because it's really about, you know, Europeans battling with themselves to be human, and our humanity is never part of the conversation. And that's why I wanted to have this talk today, because I want us to emphasize and focus on the humanity of people of African descent, and especially those that were physically there in 1921 and actually years before 1921. Because if we could like kind of set the scene, there's a history of, I think there was a brother, he was a politician named Edwin McCabe. who in 1889 was advocating for Oklahoma to become an all-black state and have people migrate to Oklahoma, for Oklahoma to become an all-black state. So I found that to be interesting. But of course, that was met with resistance because Southern landowners, of course, didn't want that, because then you got to think, where are these black people going to come from? These black people are going to come from the southern South. States,
right?
Where they're tenant farming, where they're doing sharecropping, where they're a mm-hmm. source of cheap labor. So once mm-hmm. they leave, then that, you know, that messes up the money yeah. for the, you know, the wealthy whites. But, and then it also speaks to how a lot of the problems that we've had are always due to economics. And that's another reason I wanted to have this conversation, because in my own experience as a child and as a student, and even like today, when we look at mainstream media, and there probably will be a lot of conversations about the Tulsa race war, which I call it a race war, but it's often referred to as a race riot.
Right.
Because this is the 100th anniversary of it. It's the centennial.
Well, you know, to me, that's why I call it a massacre. It had been boiling for some decades, looking at the prosperity of Africans, because some people call it Little Africa, of Tulsa community. And, of course, the railroad tracks divided that community between Caucasians and us. And
that's another thing for us to talk about as well. You know, language is very important. Like, mm-hmm. you know, language is always a conduit of culture and it provides meaning. So if you say, if we call it a race riot, then it discounts it. And it discounts right. it and it lessens the existence and the experience that our people went through during those 2 days, 2 to 3 days in 1921. It was really a race war, because when you talk about a race riot, it kind of gives the feeling of, well, it was just a few white people behaving badly, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was much more than that. It was much more strategic. It was much more organized. It had, they had planes. They were flying planes and, you know, shooting at houses, you know, similar to how, and, you know, years later, you know,
in Philadelphia.
West Philadelphia.
That's May right. 13th, Wilson Good. Bob,
you had a helicopter sanctioned by the Wilson black mayor Good. At the time, Wilson Good.
Mm-hmm.
This Philadelphia Police Department, the Philadelphia Fire Department, you know, they allowed, you know, a helicopter to drop a C-4 bomb on top of a house where they knew there were civilians and women, men, and children died, you know, because they burned to death. The only survivor was Ramona Africa, who's still alive to this day. Shout out to Ramona Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another young brother, I think Birdie Africa, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. I might be mistaken, though, about Birdie Africa. But this is the historical precedent
mm-hmm.
That we have to look to. So this was an act of war.
Yeah. Well, also, it was the Greenwood, Archer, and Pine community, GAP. Mm-hmm. GAP, right, the Gap Band, which is from...
Right,
you dropped a bomb on me. Their song, You Dropped a Bomb on Me. And that's what they did. That's the first time that a bomb was dropped on a community in the United States by the government itself. Then the same in Philadelphia. The government itself did it on a community comprised mostly of African people, of American African people. The same there. And level that community. But not only that, you know, they came in the authorities. I ain't talking about the regular Caucasians, because a lot of the Caucasians were deputized by the authorities for them to go in and apprehend, go in people's homes and take their stuff and corral them and put them in a concentration camp that they that they had comprised. And a couple of days later, then the Red Cross comes in and they do accounting and so forth. That's why in the newspapers, they had like 85 dead and only 4 Caucasians and stuff like that. But in essence, they found a mass grave. They believe that over 300 of our people were killed in that situation. You know, I remember watching 60 Minutes and a few other programs that I've seen over the years of the Tulsa massacre, where, you know, those survivors who are now, I think almost all probably are dead. Of course, it's coming up on 100 years. And so even if they were 5 years old, they'd be 105, you know. So pretty much And many of those brothers and sisters just wanted to see some kind of redemption, some kind of acknowledgement of what happened. You know, unfortunately, the government of Oklahoma, the state of Oklahoma, the city of Tulsa gave lip service. Well, there was one legislator who I remember distinctively about 20 years ago who was adamant against us receiving anything. It happened. Get over it. Move on. You know, we're sorry. Let's move on. No, I'm not in favor of giving any compensation to these people. You know, just a all out bigoted son of a bitch. You know, just made me angry when I was watching it. You know, and that was about 20 years ago. But understand, even though they had a mayor that is in favor of finding a way to compensate the brothers and sisters who lost so much. I mean, when you look at that community and all of the things that it has, there is, and since that time, Brother Kill, that community, Rosewood, Elaine, Arkansas, more contemporary, the Haiti community in North Carolina, there is not one community, and you correct me if I'm wrong, son, there is not one community in America like those communities today, where it's self-contained, where we have truly have a community, not a neighborhood, or in most cases what we have now ain't neighborhoods because we ain't too damn neighborly. We just have hoods. But a community that is self-contained, that it has businesses, it has all the things. We don't have to go outside of that. It has stores, theaters, hospitals, and so forth. There is not one place in this country like that.
Yeah, not that I know of.
No,
not that I know. You got black. You got pockets and areas of you know demographics where black folks with money, and,
right?
You know, but we're not able to provide for ourselves totally,
no.
Economically and you know politically in those spaces.
Right.
You mentioned Elaine, Arkansas. I wanted to kind of leverage that because I think also when we think about Tulsa and Little Africa. Which I'm trying to get into the habit of referring to this as Little Africa.
Let's do it. Let's do it. We'll call it Little Africa. I love it.
Because you know, names are very important. And when I think of Black Wall Street now, like when I was younger and I learned about this, I would say Black Wall Street with a sense of pride. But that was more of an assimilationist type of leaning, you know, where it's like, okay, I know what Wall Street is. I know what they're doing in Manhattan and New York City. And to be able to say that there's a black version of what the white people are doing, which was built on slave, you know, labor anyway, was a point of pride because of my confusion at that point. And then even with Black Wall Street, it's similar. It's kind of similar to like, you know, when people, you know, we attend certain HBCUs and we refer to some of the HBCUs as the Black Ivy League. Again, what we're doing is we're privileging white European controlled institutions. And we're measuring, we're using them as the measuring stick and seeking validation by making comparisons to those institutions. And we never stop for a moment to think that, well, maybe those institutions shouldn't be the standard. Maybe our institutions should be the standard. I think our institutions should be the standard. Even,
yes.
Even when you think of somebody like a Du Bois that got a PhD from Harvard. And I used to think that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, he was the first African-American PhD from Harvard. But even he said himself, you know, I assure you that the pleasure was all Harvard's. You know, so he was very clear that his foundations and his education was really, it was really derived from Fisk University, a historically black college mm-hmm. in Nashville, mm-hmm. Tennessee. But as you bring up these other cities, like, you know, we also have to understand that what happened in Tulsa in 1921 was not an isolated incident. There was an environment of this, of course. I mean, because you have like the Red Summer.
Right, of 1919. Yes.
You have the East St. Louis massacre mm-hmm. In July 1917, 125 mm-hmm. people dead. Washington, D.C.
Yeah, Atlanta, Georgia. All of that, listen, all in that pocket of 1818 to 1918 to 1922, a consistent, not even just in the summer, just consistently throughout. And when the brothers came back, just like what happened in Tulsa, the brothers had came back from the First World War, World War One, and they had right. They had rifles and so forth. So when that brother who went into the hotel or the office building and got into the elevator and tripped and fell and brushed up against the Caucasian operator, and she screamed, you know, she didn't say, some said she said rape, but the brother who gave us the tour, Brother Chief Ugumawali, said no, she just screamed, but someone right. heard it, and they right. called the authorities because they seen it. And then of course he's come running out. He was just going to go use the bathroom because they had a bathroom in that building on the third or fourth floor for coloreds, and he wanted to use that right. bathroom.
He was a boot black.
Yes,
boot
black. That's right. He was a shoe shine. Yes,
boy, across the street. In the building across the street, and they didn't have restroom facilities in that building.
Right.
So the person that owned that building that allowed him and some other people to shine shoes in that building, they had an arrangement where they could go across the street and use the restroom facilities in the other building.
Right.
Or at least probably, I'm sure they had restroom facilities, but again, with segregation, you can't even go to the bathroom. You can't even take a piss
right.
in the building, you know, right. where you're doing work at and yep. providing the service. So yep. again, the lack of humanity in those spaces. So let's talk. I want to talk a little bit about the background and like what actually happened, and then kind of put it in perspective. Anybody that's listening, they might not really know. So the young brother named Dick Rowland,
mm-hmm.
the young brother was a boot black. He used to shine shoes. He's trying to go to the restroom. Goes across the street, leaves his area in the lobby of the building where he was shining shoes at, and goes across the street, gets on the elevator because he could use the bathroom in that building. It's a white girl elevator operator. He lost his balance some kind of way, fell against her, knocked into her. She screams, "Oh, black man, touch me." She screams. So he's like, "Okay, let me get out of here." He, runs off the elevator. Somebody sees it. And then as rumors start to spread, that, you know, he assaulted this white girl, right? Of course, it didn't happen. And then when we think about that, again, that connects us and brings us back to, like, the work of Ida B. Wells and all of her work with the anti-lynching crusade
mm-hmm.
and her doing the research and really doing real sociological research and analysis, interviewing black families in the South and throughout and finding out about, okay, well, what happened, you know, in these situations? And it's the excuse that's always given is, that, oh, this man attempted to rape her with this white woman. Mm-hmm. And it usually is never that.
Right.
That never was the case, right? So the white woman is, like, weaponized against us, used as this, like, tool to, you know, to justify, you know, white dominance and justify the murder of black men and in some cases black women and black children, too, mm-hmm. through lynching, right? So he's arrested, and he's later arrested. There's a newspaper article about what happened and everything. And then white people start to organize outside of the courthouse where he was arrested. This is the night of May 31st, 1921, right? So I'm looking for these numbers. I figure like 400 white men
mm-hmm.
organized outside. And people know what it is. But then in terms of the dishonesty of the white community, they land. I'm going to read something from this resource that I had.
Okay.
Where it's flat out just dishonest, and they act as if lynching really wasn't a thing, right? So 400 white men organized outside the courthouse around 9 o'clock that night, right? So people know what time it is. They know what's going to happen. Black people, the black community organizes. Black men get together, like 30 brothers get together, and go down to the courthouse to try to defend this.
That's right. With their guns. Because they just came back from the... First World War, so they had weapons.
World War One, mm-hmm. World War One, right? So it's like, oh, I'm supposed to go over there and, you know, fight Hitler for y'all, but I can't come here and defend my humanity back at home in the United States. Again, exposing the contradiction of America, right? So first it's like 30 black men, and then it's like 75 black men, and then they started to disperse and start to walk back toward the Greenwood section. And they come in contact with some more black men that were on their way to the courthouse. So then they say, okay, well, you know what? Yeah, let's go back. So then about that time, approximately, it's like maybe 200 brothers out there standing guard. And then what happens is, one of the brothers is and I'm looking for the actual quote, or supposed, exchange. between this one brother and this this cop, right? The brother's like a World War One vet. He's standing outside there, and you know, he's got his 45 caliber pistol. And you know, the white man comes up on him and then says, you know, what are you gonna do with that? And he says, I'm gonna use it if I have to. Mm-hmm. So then the white man tries to says, give it to me. And he says, the hell I will. Mm-hmm. And then a scuffle ensues, mm-hmm. and then a shot goes off up in the air. And that kicks it off. But what I wanna read is from this text. And basically what happens, and again, this is like you mentioned, this is in the context of World War One. This is right after World War One. World War One ends in 1918. World War One goes from 1914 to 1918. Incidentally, which was really about, you know, the scramble for Africa, since we're on the topic, mm-hmm. it really wasn't about you know, oh, Archduke Ferdinand got assassinated, and you know, these white people were just having you know, white on white violence and gang violence among themselves. Because I remember when I was in school, I was confused. I didn't know that. You know, it was about the scramble for Africa. It was about Africa's natural resources. It's always about black people, some kind of way, even though they try to keep us out of the conversation, you know, so adamantly. They compared us to compared the black people in Tulsa to Nazi Germans. And I'll read this. This is a statement of the pastors of the city of Tulsa. And the politicians were saying the same thing. They were on code. They're like, okay, this is the narrative. This is the story we're going to give them. It reads, the fair name of the city of Tulsa has been tarnished and blackened by a crime that ranks with the dastardly deeds of the Germans during the Great War, provoked by the bad element of the Negroes, arming themselves and marching through the streets of the city. Block after block, our city has been swept by fire applied by the frenzied hand of the mob. Many of our people are dead, while thousands of innocent, peaceable, and law-abiding citizens have not only been rendered homeless, but they have been robbed and despoiled of all their earthly possessions. The pastors of Tulsa blush for shame at this outrage, which renders our city odious and condemned before the world. So as you read this, and like I said, these are the local pastors in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but the local politicians are saying the same exact thing. They are placing all the blame squarely at the feet of the black people because our crime was their crime. Those 200 black men, their crime was trying to defend and prevent that black boy from being pulled out of jail and lynched, as it's been happening so often, it still happens to this day, right? So often, that was the crime. That was the act of war on our part. So when we think about that, and then they get compared to Nazi Germans for doing that, for defending a young black boy that was going to be lynched, that's the act of war. When we really think about that and really conceptualize that, we know what we're dealing with. So again, whenever I talk about these things, and another thing I wanted to mention is, like, what is always the purpose of having these conversations? What's the purpose of even talking about these things? Some people want to have these conversations because they want to talk about and reflect on how black people have contributed to America and helped America grow into what it is. And we've always been part of this American project. Some people, on the other hand, have a Pan-African nationalist leaning or a black nationalist leaning. And they want to show, listen, we need to be independent. So, you know, when you deal with situations like that where basically, they're letting us know, and let us know 100 years ago. If we want to come kill one of y'all, because as a community, as a European white collective community, we want to come kill one of y'all, and y'all have the audacity to try to stop us from killing one of y'all in the way that we want to kill one of y'all, then it's going to be a problem. We're gonna pull all your men out of the houses. We're gonna put you in internment camps, right? And this is before Japan, before the Japanese internment camps in World War II in 1942. This is before that. We're gonna put all the men in internment camps. So we're gonna have a war, but it's gonna be an asymmetrical warfare, right? And you know, then we're gonna go into your houses, men and women and children. We're gonna run up in all your houses, steal everything, because we're thieves. And then we're gonna burn your houses down, right? And then we're gonna take over the real estate. That's what's going to happen. So we understand that, right? They're talking about they were trying to defend their city. I got some Star Spangled Banner type stuff. They were trying to defend their city from these black people that had the audacity to stand up and try to defend this black boy that they were going to murder. And this is what happened in Tulsa in 1921. This is the essence of what it was about. So this should let us know very clearly. This is who we were dealing with. And then the question can be, when collectively as a group, When did they change?
Yeah, never.
No Listen, one can answer that question for me. Yeah. No one can definitively and logically explain to me when a change was made. When did Europeans have a meeting and get together and say, we're not going to be like this anymore?
Never.
It never happened.
Brother, we're going to take a break. It's going to be at the top of the hour. We're going to take a break. We come back from that break. I got a lot of people on the hold. And, of course, if you want to have conversation with Brother Akil Parker, we're talking about the Tulsa Massacre and its relevance to us and what's happening. You hit star twice, and that puts you in. I'll give you opportunity to ask a question, comment, or concern. But if you dial 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, I'll get you in. I did talk to Brother Chief Igumawale, and the one that they're having with John Hope Franklin, that ain't the one. They're having a Black Wall Street Legacy Festival, the 28th of May to 31st. That's the one. A website is coming up. Dr. Tiffany Crutcher is one of the persons who helped running it. And Dr. Tiffany Crutcher, her father is Terrence Crutcher, the brother who was shot by that Caucasian lady. If you can remember, just another one of the brother's unarmed shooting that took place in the last few years. This took place in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They were, in fact, if you can remember, they had a helicopter and there was some communications and they were talking about he looks kind of suspicious or whatever. And she shoots him in the back. And she got a job. She got a job in another county as a police officer in another county. Shot him in the back. So that's Black Wall Street Legacy Festival. So the website is coming up. And if please, if you can make it to Tulsa for this commemoration, please do so. I definitely plan to make it. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back with Brother Akil Parker. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is girl, Shy Bless, and I'm back in the building. Ah. Hey.
Got us like paraplegics, frozen stiff and depleted. Body back by the wayside, history re-repeated. Hell, they don't like the Kennedys, we all public enemies. The program satanic, tapping into our energies. They go super soapy, call themselves black and noble. Their position is global, so our transition is vocal. It all start with the churches, killer bees be the workers. Missionaries, they carry the wickedness to you suffers. They all hate us and bait us, then they miseducate us. Religions intimidate us, so we worship in invaders. They agree to invade. You are the chosen 144,000. The rouse spell has been broken.
shop less. Are you prepared to stand up for the liberation of your people?
I am.
Are you willing to fight against the wickedness and evil of this present day system?
Wait a minute, Shoutless. We saved your people. We brought you over here from Africa. We gave you a new name, a new culture, a new language, a new religion, a new God. So what do you say to that?
Fuck you. The power of me and my people against the forces of evil. Got you looking for paradise through eyes of a needle. So as you look for Houdini, I study Kundalini. Rising up through my vertebrae till I see the genie. Now do you like that? Yeah, we like that. Ready to fight back? Ready to fight back. But they don't like that. You embrace carrying loads of dead weight. We displace all over this earth, cursed with hate. Still bowing down to masters who burn and cash pay. We so divine, spiritual slaves, deaf and blind, but intertwined. Can recognize your black signs. You think not, so we rock braids and twist knots. That's not ether, galaxy rays and equinox. The soul seeker, astro signs. We need the clock, the age of Aquarius. All shifts and rise. Do you like that? Yeah, we like that.
Against us, they're trying to take us down, but you must realize if you tap into your energies that they tried to keep you from, the ancestors, they have another plan. I'm calling on the ancestors, the ancestors. Come on, that's Black Science.
Now do you like that?
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That's Sister Shabless. We fight back. Yeah. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, of course, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, a public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And then following that is from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. After that program is 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. And then on Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. Saturdays, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with Host LaWanda Chambers. And then at 7 p.m., from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And getting back to my brother, Brother Kill Parker.
Yeah, can I read a quote also from the mayor of Tulsa?
At that time, from that time? Sure, please do.
Yeah, so again, in talking about like not even... I guess the word disingenuous is not a strong enough term really to describe it. But in this address to from the mayor to the local city commissioners on June 14th, 1921. So this is like about 2 weeks after the massacre, after the race war, which was asymmetrical war. We have to be clear about that, because we say war, you start to think that, you know, things were, you know, even. Right.
Right. You're battling about, back and forth. Nah, yeah.
Part out.
Yeah.
200 brothers that go to the courthouse to defend Dick Rowland versus about 2,000 white men that had assembled.
Right.
So we're talking about a 10-to-1 ratio.
Oh, yeah. Math and everything. But listen, man, hey, they came. Them Caucasians came from far and wide. Once they heard about this situation happening, they came from far and wide, ready to throw down, ready to kill some of us and take our stuff. This is. So go ahead and read that piece.
So again, they must think we're stupid. This mayor, what's his name? T.J. Dean, I believe his name. Not T.J. Dean, T.D. Evans. T.D. Evans, Mayor T.D. Evans. He's the mayor of Tulsa, Oklahoma. He says there was no cause for this trouble. Even when these Negroes were at the jail, talking about the brothers outside, you know, trying to defend Dick Rowland, there still was no reason for their making any trouble. They were assured over and over again that the prisoner held by the sheriff was safe, that no one could get him. No organized mob was in the act of getting him, nor was there any danger apparent that they would get him. The occasion brought quickly around the courthouse hundreds of men, women, and children, as is usually the case when any rumor of this nature gets in the air. The great, great majority of white people who ran in were wholly unarmed. There was every reason to believe that when these Negroes knew their prisoner was safe, that the trouble would immediately stop, because usually when a cause is removed, there will be no effect. A shot fired by a fool black person, calls him a fool black person, calls the brother just came home from World War One, a fool black person, evidently without cause, set the whole affair going and set the old fires of racial war and hatred going in all their fury. So they must, again, he must
blame, you know, it on us.
It's something that we're stupid. Like,
yeah.
So 200 white men, 400, matter of fact, 400, it was 400 white men assembled outside of a courthouse where a black boy is accused of some type of sexually assaulting a white girl. And we're supposed to just sit back and just think, oh, he's going to be fine. The sheriff's going to protect him. Like, that, we know how this works,
mm-hmm.
right? But then this, and this is documented. This is in the Tulsa City Commission meeting minutes dated June 14th, 1921. These are excerpts from the original documents. This white man stood up and said this, right? So as to justify, and then even, and again, in terms of like it being a race war and not a race riot and us thinking about our language differently, when we look at their accounts, like this is a win for them. This was a win. Like they use language like, he also uses language like, it is fitting that we first remember and thank those officers, both regular and special, members of the National Guard of the Legion, and the great number of good citizens who risked their lives to defend this city. That's like, that's war talk. That's how you talk after you've won a war, right? A list of their names should be preserved that the people may in the future remember them in some fitting manner for their valiant fight to protect Tulsa and make her safe for the future. That's like some Veterans Day shit,
mm-hmm.
right? This is what. Also, then he went further to say, let the blame for this Negro uprising lie right where it belongs, on those armed Negroes. So the problem is we had guns. That's the problem, right? That's mm-hmm. what he's trying to communicate. And their followers who started this trouble and who instigated it, and any persons who seek to put half the blame on the white people are wrong and should be told so in no uncertain terms. We are told that twice before we assumed power as city officials that armed mobs of Negroes visited the white section of the city and made certain demands under threats of force. I don't believe that at all. I don't think there's any documentation of that really happening at all. But again, but the language in and of itself, it's a language of war, conquer. We had to, you know, we had to dominate them. We had to conquer. We had to defend Tulsa from these Negroes with guns. So the crime and the act of war on our part was simply being willing to defend ourselves.
Right.
That's the crime in and of itself. And we have to just accept that. And once we accept that, then we'll know how to proceed. So, you know, again, this is Malcolm X's words, you know, in the beginning of the message to the grassroots. So I want to have 1963. I want to have an off the cuff conversation with you. America has a problem. America's problem is you.
You.
We are America's problem. We were America's problem then. We're still America's problem now. There's still always going to be a Negro problem in America under the current structure in America being organized the way it is. There will always be a Negro problem.
And see,
the question is like, how do we? And even in Tulsa, there was this like paternalistic, like relationship. And you know, again, when we get back into the economics, there was a huge wealth transfer that took place on Thursdays and also at other times, because on Thursdays, many of the women, many of the black women from the Greenwood section or Little Africa, they worked as maids,
right,
for the white,
but also too. Surrounding areas. Also, too, they worked for us because there were some of us, because let's be real, what fueled Tulsa was oil. And some of us right. had opportunity to have that. And some of us had moved to Tulsa from other places where discrimination was so deeply embedded and ingrained that they knew that they could not, you know, even though they might have had some resources, but they couldn't visualize and they couldn't utilize those resources. So they moved to Tulsa where it was happening. You know, the brother who built the hotel, the brother who bought large lots of land and sold it only to us. Right. Sold that land right. only to us to help build that community. You see, like I said, the money in that community circulated within that community for months. For months. Money now in our community everywhere across this country might be in our hands, and it might be out of our hands and out of our community the next hour.
So what you do is if you're the white community and you want that, so if I have black workers, if I'm, you know, all these white people have black workers, and they're working and they're getting paychecks, and then you want that money to continue to circulate in the white community, you have to remove black businesses.
That's right.
Remove the black businesses. So now you're forced to provide for your food, clothing, and shelter and entertainment through me. So you got to just bring that money and recirculate it back. So let's destroy all the black businesses. Destroy the black businesses. Destroy the black homes. Displace the black people. Relocate them somewhere else. Because then we can use the land where the residential area used to be in Little Africa, and we can build factories and we can make it a space for manufacturing. Right? They talk about that too. The mayor talks about that also. He says, let me see, what does he say? A large portion of this district is well suited for industrial purposes, better adapted for these purposes than for residences. First of all, white man, how do you decide where, you know, what's a better use of this land than the people that were already living there? This is a unilateral decision that you're making, but this is consistent.
Yeah.
Right. Once it is assured that it will be so used, there will be a decided rise in value, which will give the property owners more for their naked ground than his whole property was worth before the fire. Let the Negro settlement be placed farther to the north and east. When he said, when I read that, I started thinking about, I've watched a lot of TV, right? I started thinking about The Godfather Part One. They're sitting around having a meeting.
Right.
They're trying to decide whether they're going to sell heroin or not.
Right.
And Vito's the only one that's like, nah, so we shouldn't do that because it's going to come back to our children. The one boss from the one family says, you know, give it to the niggas. They don't have souls anyway.
That's right.
Right? So,
yeah.
So it's, again, it's this paternalistic, like, relationship, this paternalistic, symbiotic relationship where it's like, we're going to make decisions that are good. We know what's best for you. We know what's best for y'all. We're going to make the decisions, but we're going to act as if this is what's best for everybody. But even when we talk about everybody, again, language, we get back to the fundamental concept of humanity. Mm-hmm. Who's human? When we talk about everybody, we're only talking about the people that they think are human. They think Europeans and white people are human. So it's really about only what benefits them, right? He says, again, goes further to say, we should immediately get in touch with all the railroads with a view to establishing a union station. So they got plans. They know what they're about to do, right? Union station on this ground. The location is ideal and all the railroads convenient. From our acquaintance with all conditions after several days for settling back to a normal state, I believe a committee of citizens can now well be selected to constitute the legally appointed committee for the city and to be known as a reconstruction committee. And I recommend such action. Last part I want to read made me think about white allies. This is key. He says, let me see, many well-known men in other lines.
This call may be recorded and transcribed.
I'm very skeptical of like concept of white allies anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the mayor goes further to say, many well-known men in other lines cannot handle this section to the best advantage. Persons who have lived here many years and helped blaze the way for Greater Tulsa, who know every foot of the ground and who are well acquainted with these colored people and who are honest and reliable can best handle this proposition. I believe a committee consisting of the following men will be equal to the greater task of aiding and guiding us to a conclusion beneficial to all. So basically, we need to recruit the white people that have already been interacting with the black folks that the black people trust so that we can, you know, put forth and promote our efforts and our desires and attain our goals, right? So this sounds to me like these would be the so-called white allies, right? But their job is to, okay, you know, they're talking to, you know, the mayors and, you know, the corporate leaders and whatnot. And it's like, well, the black people trust y'all. So this is what we want y'all to do. This is the end game. So go convince the black people that they should get on board with this. This is what this, now, again, that's my, I'm inferring, right? I'm inferring because it doesn't say that verbatim. But I'm inferring based on my study of history and just my own life experiences and whatnot. But I think, you know, that's the point of reading and study and analysis. You know, we have to make inferences.
Right.
We have to make contrast from, you know, between history and present day and what we see going on all around us. You know?
You know, what's interesting, and I'm looking at, and like I said, I've been to Tulsa. I was in Tulsa last year. And I'm anxious and I'm looking forward to being a part of that Tulsa Legacy Festival that they're going to have May 28th through the 31st, along with a lot of other activities that are happening in Tulsa. But this one particular piece here is by us, for us, in terms of looking at this massacre, you know, and the devastation and destruction. When you look at the number of businesses that they were self-contained, as I stated earlier, they had everything they needed. They did not have to go outside of their community for nothing, for nothing. Churches, entertainment, two theaters, you know, I mean, everything right there, hotels, other businesses, you know, they didn't have to go outside of their community for nothing. And the evilness, the jealousy, the pettiness, the mean-spiritedness of these Caucasians looking for any spark. And you can see that in all the other instances across the country where Caucasians vamped on our community. You know, I mean, when they talk about a riot, I look at, you know, what happened to us in the 60s, which I grew up in, where we were just so fed up with police brutality, so fed up with the conditions and jobs and so forth, that we demonstrated, and then that turned out to be a riot, you know, because we were so mad, we just tearing stuff up. We mad as hell in Chicago, D.C., Newark, New Jersey, even Milwaukee, Detroit in 67. We're mad as hell, you know, but when Caucasians, just recently, what you saw happening January 6th, you know, they vamped on the government itself, you know, because they mad about an election. We mad about being brutalized. We're mad about being killed. We're mad about being lynched. Right, y'all just mad because y'all lost some damn election and want to claim fraud and so forth, you know. So, I mean, you know, this situation. And once again, brothers and sisters, if you've got many people hanging on, Brother Akil, a lot of folks want to get in on this conversation. I hope you hit star twice. Once you hit star twice, I'll let you in and you can have conversation on this issue of the Tulsa massacre, because that's what it was. Just like the Elaine, Arkansas was another massacre, just like Allentown in Los Angeles was another massacre, Rosewood was another massacre, all the other places were another, because the Caucasians are larger in number and they had weaponry. This is not a war. It's not a fair fight. We didn't plan to fight and battle with them. No, they vamped on our community and took our stuff, burned our buildings down, some cases killed us, or they put us in prison. Or like they did in Tulsa, they put us in concentration camps. And although, Brother Akil, they did rebuild in some areas, but yet, because they did not have the foundation that they had previously, then they succumbed to, you know, integration and other stuff that they had to do. So they, you know, they did rebuild to some extent, but it wasn't the glory that they had established as a model for other communities for us to emulate and say, yeah, we can do this. We can be self-contained. We can have everything in our community that we need or even desire, let alone need. We can have right here. You know, they had jewelry stores. They had everything, you know. So if anybody wants to join this conversation, hit star twice or dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today about the Tulsa massacre. This is the 100th year. This is the 100th year of that commemoration, and there are going to be some big doings in. I'm quite sure you'll be able to see some of that on C-SPAN, you know, and other programming, you know. But, you know, I remember when they had the hearings And just as I mentioned in the first half of the program, this one Caucasian legislator who is so adamant against, you know, brothers and sisters receiving not even a dime. His mind said it happened. We apologize. Get over it. Let's move on.
So if I could jump in based on that, that reminded me of something. So the problem with the viewing travesties through a moral lens solely through a moral lens is just that, because if you view something wrong through a moral lens, all you'll expect is an apology. An apology makes it all better. But when you look at it through like an economic lens at the same time, because this was a huge wealth transfer.
Oh, huge.
And a property transfer and a wealth transfer, right? So when you start to look at things that way, then you start to think about, and then you think about all the riots and all the race wars and all of these things have economic implications. But far too often, many of us, and what the mainstream media does, is they put it out there like, cause even you have, you know, it becomes like a, kind of like a game, you know. They're like, okay, the good white people and the bad white people, and then you have the good white people on CNN or whatever talking about look at what the bad white people are doing, right? And then it becomes this moral issue, right? When we don't, and it kind of distracts us from the economic implications and how, you know, money is lost, resources are lost, land is lost, because we end up getting caught up in, well, no, we just want them to apologize, but we want to heal, right? Healing. And oftentimes and healing is cool, but oftentimes the conversations around healing do not involve cutting checks.
Right. There's no restitution.
Nobody signs no checks.
Right. There's healing. No restitution. It's just
no financial restitution. Even though you can't put theoretically we can't really put a price on the psychological trauma of seeing your community burn down. You know, 25 square blocks, 1,000 houses razed. Right. Over the course of during the daytime, you know, and then to understand and have to process the fact that this happened because we, again, back to the source of what it was, in that particular moment, we knew that these white people were going to lynch this young black boy, and black men stood up and the community came together and said, listen, no, we're going to defend him and prevent that. And then this is what we have to experience because of that, because of being human and doing the right thing, right? And then having to deal with that. You can't really put a price on that, but there's some money that should be paid. There's some resources that should be provided, you know? And then, but then you have, like you mentioned, the politician that was adamantly against it, right? And I think at some point we have to just accept that that's how they're going to be and figure out, you know, either a different way to get that type of reparation, while at the same time, while simultaneously trying to create something independent for ourselves where we won't have to worry about it.
Well, see, that's why, you know, I know there are some of us who are against reparations, you know, for us. Some of us, there's a group of us who believe that an apology from Caucasians is enough. And well, I'm just keeping it real, man.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh.
I know. It's just that ridiculous. It is. Who believe that apology is enough and the society is not what it was in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and even 60s. The society now in 2020, 21 is a society that is more objective, is more fair. After all, we had a black president. After all, we have more of us in Congress, more of us in the, we don't have nobody in the Senate anymore. Yes, we do. We had that Negro in South Carolina. Sure do. But anyway, so we have all of these. And so now it is a fair society. And so, you know, all the things that happened in the past, it's the past. And let us continue to move forward, you know. And so we don't want to bring that up. You don't talk about reparations. But not understanding. And I had a conversation, because I hate Ronald Reagan with a passion, because I believe that Ronald Reagan, the crux of the economic problems that are happening not just in America, but in this world, was Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, where you see the Europeans have so much damn wealth here in this country, you know, the wealth gap is so damn large. It's so huge nationally. The average wealth for Caucasians is $180,000. The average for us, $24,000. They said it would take over 230 years if Caucasians' wealth was frozen. And ours was given incrementally to a degree, it would take over 230 years for it to be equitable. So to me, you know, when I heard about economic literacy and some kind of equality in terms of economic, it's ridiculous. That's a moot damn point. It'll never happen. It's too far out of whack. When you have businesses, excuse me, when you have CEOs and others, individuals who are making tens of millions of dollars, when you have a person like Jeff damn Bezos who now has to pay, I think it was $3 billion in taxes, but yet he still has over $100-some billion. Right. $100-some billion. So this whole economic situation is so out of whack that it's ridiculous to even deal with. That's why, to me, is that a new economic system must take place, not in this country, because we can't do it here. This is theirs. Let them have it. We need sovereignty. We need independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. It is the only solution for African people. It's the only. But yet we continue to hope and pray and plead and hopefully that some of these Negroes will and some of these Caucasians will be sympathetic and empathetic to our situation and allow us to be a part of this madness and share in it. But of course, always, always beneath them. Always. It is not, it will never be equal. There will never be something that is equitable within the society between them and us, because they will not stand for it. They will not stand for it.
Yeah. And that racial hierarchy has to be maintained. And, you know, let me read another short passage from this text. And the text I'm referring to, and there are many texts written about the Tulsa race riot, race massacre, race war. But this is Black Wall Street, From Riot to Renaissance in Tulsa's Historic Greenwood District. The author is Hannibal B. Johnson.
Yeah, I met him. Yeah,
yeah, he's one of the featured speakers. The reason that I started doing this research was the Carter Center, based out of the University of Missouri. Shout out to the brother, Dr. LeGarrett King, who's the director of the Carter Center. They have a Teaching Black History conference every year. So this year's theme, because it's the centennial of this race war, is Tulsa. It's Tulsa 1921, the Tulsa 1921 race riot, race war. So that's why I really picked this up. I had it in my library, but then I had the impetus to pick it up. But this portion of this chapter documents what was really happening, you know, inside the houses when the looting was going on. Because again, it was very strategic. It was like, okay, we got to get the men out of here, put them in the internment camps, get the women out of here, get the children out of here too. Then we go and we loot, steal everything, burn the houses down. And then we have the land. So it says here, it reads, after they had the homes vacated, one bunch of whites would come in and loot. Even women with shopping bags would come in, open drawers, take every kind of finery from clothing to silverware and jewelry. Men were carrying out the furniture, cursing as they did so, saying, quote, these damn Negroes have better things than lots of white people, end quote. I stayed until my home was caught on fire. Then I ran to the hillside where there were throngs of white people, women, men, and children, even babies, watching and taking snapshots of the proceedings of the mob. Some remarked that, quote, the city ought to be sued for selling damn niggers property close to the city. One woman noticed the First Baptist Church of North Tulsa, which is a beautiful structure located near a white residence district. She said, yonder is a nigger church. Why ain't they burning it? The reply was, it's in a white district. So a couple of things come to mind. Think about the level of humanity. Like, you know, I thought, you know, churches and, you know, religious institutions, you know, if it's a fair fight, are at least supposed to be off limits.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly they're not.
No. Nothing's off limits.
Not off limits, right?
No, nothing's off limits.
That shows the level of decency of these people that were involved. And again, I think a lot in the terms of the mentality of the people that were doing this looting, they convinced themselves, again, I'm going to infer again, they convinced themselves that they weren't doing anything wrong, because what they were doing is they were reestablishing equilibrium. Because if you go into, because if I'm white and I feel like that I'm supposed to be superior to any black person, and then I go into your house and you have better material items than I do, and that's a problem. The universe is in balance. So let's rebalance, let's recalibrate the universe by taking your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we take it, now it's in our house now. So now we have done a good deed, we've done a service, and we've helped to rebalance the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's their belief. Their belief in this racial hierarchy and this idea, this white supremacy mythology, you know, so much so to the point where even to this day, many of them will support Republican or conservative politicians that don't care about them because they don't understand class analysis either, just like many of our black people don't understand class analysis. They'll vote for whiteness over economic interests in a heartbeat. And King has a short quote about that, but when he said back in the 60s, white supremacy will feed their egos, but it won't feed their stomachs. And many of them still haven't learned that, you know. And we just, you know, we see the examples. We see the examples play out. Does anybody wanna join the conversation?
Join the conversation, dear brothers. If you can hit star twice, because there's a lot of people on the board. For those on the board, you hit star twice, join the conversation, or dial 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. You know, they rounded those brothers and sisters up and put them in tent cities and concentration camps, and they were there for months. They were there for months, you know, and many of the people who lost all of their resources, all the institutions that were part of the Greenwood District in Tulsa, gone. But yet we have the resiliency to be able to rebuild because of the faith we had in each other. You know, if anybody gets a chance to go to Tulsa the end of May for the commemorations, like I said, I'm going to be promoting the Black Wall Street Legacy Festival. Black Wall Street Legacy Festival. I'll let you know when that website is up so you can go to that website. You know, 334, good afternoon.
Brother Oshi, good afternoon, and good afternoon to you, guests. The question that I have, and hopefully he could direct me accordingly, is at one time where there was a migration out to that area.
Yeah.
Is there records of sorts that, because I'm particularly interested in people from northern Alabama who may have wound up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then after that affair and that tragic event, remigrated back. Is there records that I could kind of peer into a little bit to see people who have came from this area, went there, and then maybe eventually came back?
So, I would assume yes. I don't know where those records would be. I guess you could do further research and look into like primary source material surrounding the Tulsa race war. The author of this book, Hannibal Johnson, he documents that, you know, a lot of people went to Kansas. Many people just left Oklahoma, you know, on the day of or the day after, as opposed to staying in the, and that's another thing real quick, in terms of the concentration camps, they implemented, see, like, you know, Europeans, you know, have global systems that manifest themselves in different local places, right? They implemented a system where every black person in one of those internment camps / concentration camps had what's called a green card. And the only way you could get off is if, you know, there was a white person from the community that vouch for you and sign off on your green card.
That's
you,
true.
You couldn't be out in public or in the streets of Tulsa after this state of emergency was declared and the National Guard was in and everything. So that's another thing. So when we want to make connections between our experience in one place to our experience in another place, that takes us right to apartheid South Africa. That takes us to Steve Biko, Mandela, Robert Sobukwe, all of these people. So, that's another thing I think, we should do when we're having these conversations with our children, especially, is like, let them know that none of this is isolated. None of this is isolated at all. But to your question, brother, I really don't know where you would go to get that information. I'm sure that information is available, though.
Yeah.
Question makes me think about even, when you study Ida B. Wells and another lynching that took place, the brothers that owned the People's Grocery Company, the three brothers that owned that, they were lynched. And then, Ida B. Wells, her response, because one of the owners was a close friend of hers. He and his wife were a close friend of hers. And, she urged people to migrate for the West. And this is like early 20th century. So it's interesting. I wonder if any of the people that, were trying to flee racial persecution in Tennessee, in Memphis, Tennessee, if they ended up in Tulsa and then had to leave again. I wonder about that. That's
With the migration pattern, if you were in the direct South, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, you go straight north, Chicago. If you were in the Carolinas and Virginia, you go straight north, New York, Philadelphia, that kind of thing. If you were in Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, and so forth, you would go west, the Seminole Wars, when Andrew Jackson's racist ass finally defeated them and moved them to the Trail of Tears, they went to Oklahoma. And many of those Africans who had escaped captivity went into Florida, and some lived with the Seminoles. And also, too, keep in mind, some of the Seminoles kept us, too, in captivity. Kept us in captivity then and there. But they moved in that Trail of Tears. We were on that Trail of Tears. That's why there was some anger when Oklahoma, the city of Oklahoma, and the government gave indigenous people some reparations, so to speak, and we got nothing.
Did we ever get anything?
No, we never get anything. Hold on, Jay. Just hold on. No, we don't. But we got nothing, And the bottom line is that we were also, but a stipulation was put in by, I think it was a Cherokee, whoever, if you had to be full-blooded in order for you to get some of this compensation that was given because of what happened to us. I mean, it's just some dastardly stuff. So yeah, do the research on that if you can, and let us know. Okay, Brother Lusk?
All right. Yeah. And the name of the book that's in your possession, brother, is what now?
The title of this book is called Black Wall Street. And the subtitle is From Riot to Renaissance in Tulsa's Historic Greenwood District. But if you just look up Black Wall Street by Hannibal Johnson.
Hannibal Johnson. Got it.
Yeah. In fact, there is a lot of good stuff. Even on YouTube, a number of things, because I was going to play a couple of things, but I know that me and Brother Akil are going to go into conversation, so we'll just let that happen, because there's a couple of things that I really wanted to play that helps give you a good perspective of what was happening at that time. What we were doing prior to, the Caucasian vamping on us. So, but yeah, go to YouTube and hit Tulsa Massacre. Tulsa Massacre.
All right,
dear brother.
Thank you.
And always.
Thank you.
You bet. Have a good weekend. Santi Sana. Okay. All right. 646. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, OC, and to your brother there. Let me ask you something. I heard somebody earlier speak about white allies. Could you explain to me what a white ally is, and if even better, name me a few?
I don't have a concise definition for that. I just know that it's a term that's thrown around a lot. And oftentimes, I'll say that. I don't have a definition for that. But when I think of white allies, the only person I think of is
John Brown.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
John Brown, that's kind of pitiful if you ask me, because that's not really saying much, bro. I mean, really, if you study the history of John Brown, he was he was no great lover of African people. So, I mean, we got to do better than that. It's just like this whole thing that they talk about during the 50s and the 60s, that the small hat, the Jew, was an ally. Let me tell you something. They, like everybody else, they just use black folks to get to the position that they looking to obtain and achieve. And then they basically tell your black ass to go to hell. So, I mean, whenever we start throwing out those words about allies and friends, like Dr. Clark said, we have none, that's we right. would probably be in a better position because, you know, when you talk about places like Delsa and Rosewood and all of that, the realization is this. If you don't place yourself in a position to protect yourself at the highest level, then that's what's going to happen when dealing with white folks. Because the contradiction is just more evident now than ever. And black folks don't get it. They don't realize it. January 6th was a perfect example of the behavior of white folks and then how they go about the business of cleaning it up with a few sacrificial lambs of white folks that get caught out there. But if it was black folks that behaved in that matter on January 6th,
we'd have got shot.
The Negroes would be getting killed.
We got shot. We'd have got killed. No
we'd
doubt.
Got killed. It's that plain and simple. Yeah. Now, I would hope that we would get to the point to where as a collective and as a people, we would understand that. And that's the tragedy in a sense that I don't think we get it. To this day, you still have some black folks making excuses and feeling as though they're a part of this equation. And as you notice, these white folks just going about the business of doing their thing. And it's being shown to you that the Democrats are no different than the Republicans, other than on certain things, they're just a little more kinder, but they have one agenda: to protect whiteness, to make sure that whiteness is protected and secured and uplifted and having the ability to have the power and governance over people of color. And you know what the prime example is that's going to teach you this and black folks are not going to get it? That so-called John Lewis bill. If they don't filibuster and pass that John Lewis bill, then, hey, it is. But I'll leave you with this. And think about this. If the John Lewis bill doesn't happen and the Republicans are able to do what they're doing in regards to voter suppression and all of that, what do that do? That puts white folks in the same power position and the other white folks, the Democrats, in the same position to raise money and keep niggas in line. That's all. The best manipulation white folks can do amongst themselves. And you know something? This is something, another thing we don't understand. They collectively work together and plan it.
All right, Jay. All right. And Jay is always on point. But the reality is that our people don't understand the dynamics of what we're dealing with. We really believe that this system, you know, can work for us. We believe that somehow, some way that we can use moral persuasion to get these people to understand our, and respect our humanity and have some kind of empathy for what they've done to us and some remorse of what they've done. They don't give a, they could give less than a rat's ass about what they have done to us and what they continue to do to us, you know? And yet we've
well,
had.
Why shouldn't white people treat black people and the manner in which they do, it really the serve purpose of they treating us the way that they do is to survive. Why shouldn't they? I never understand the rationale of our people who feel as though white people should not treat us the way that they do.
Let me say this, Jay. Our problem is that we haven't been educated within ourselves. We haven't looked at the Caucasian world, what they are. They have educated us. And so, therefore, they made us believe that what they say on paper is real. They make us believe that all the stuff of truth, justice, and righteousness, all that bullshit is real. And we have bought into it so deeply that we somehow think that we can make them do what they said and what they put on paper. And it's not going to happen. It ain't. It no. didn't. It hasn't happened. It ain't happening, and it ain't gonna happen. You know,
there's no reason for it to happen.
No.
If you're gonna be honest, it's no reason for white people on any level to treat us humanely. It's our job to make them treat us humanely, and the only way that you're gonna be able to do that is you know what it is. It's to be able to be willing and sacrifice to die. And to kill them. Yeah. Other than that, it's just going to continuously go on. Because, you know, the one thing about white people, they get better and better at their ability to mistreat the planet. It's like they have this mental sickness to be able to do the things that they do and have absolutely no compassion, even if it hurts them, because they're willing to sacrifice theirs to be able to continue to have the power that they have. And the reality is we as a people don't understand this, and we don't even look at it on those terms, because what did they do? They gave you a belief in the Sky Daddy system. That's a joke.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, unfortunately, some of us get it, and some of us will never get it. But the key things that we need to do is those that get it is try to figure out how we collectively work together to survive. And I'm sorry to say it, the hell with them. The hell with the Roland Martins and the rest of them.
I agree.
Because they're nothing more than gatekeepers.
I agree. You know, to me, there has to come a point. That's why I've been advocating that we must lay the gauntlet down. Either we're going to be African or we're not. And those of us who claim to be African, not black. If you want to be black, that's another thing, because there are many people who claim to be black don't want to be African. Okay? They love being, not to say they don't want to be white, but they want what Caucasians have. They want what whites have. They want the cars, the jewelry, the clothing, the jobs, the promotions. They want to live how they live. They don't necessarily even want to live with them. Like here in Atlanta, there's so many cul-de-sacs and subdivisions and enclave where it is us. It is us. All of it. Beautiful lawns. I'm quite sure the interiors of those homes are immaculate and well furnished. But yet, they don't pull their money together to even have a damn strip mall where they can go to the store and develop a store where we can buy our goods and services. Hell, the damn Indians have that here in Atlanta. The Indians. There's a section by where I used to go to the doctor when I had my knees replaced. In that area, there's tons of businesses, jewelry stores and so forth, but they have a strip mall. In that strip mall, there's a sit-down restaurant, a takeout restaurant, a supermarket, a convenience store, jewelry store, a clothing store, appliances, everything that they need. Now, Akil. Is what Reverend Dr. Leon Sullivan, is that mall, that strip mall, still in existence, and how is it doing, if it is?
It is, Progress Plaza. Progress Plaza in North Philadelphia. It is still in existence. I know there's at least one black-owned business. There's a bank, United Bank of Philadelphia, which I believe is the only black-owned bank in Philadelphia. I'm not too sure about all of the other businesses inside of Progress Plaza. I don't think they're black owned.
See, that's what I'm saying. You got to be kidding. See, so I mean, you know, see, and what Jay is saying, I understand what Jay is saying because I know Jay. We talk, you know, and he calls, and I listen to the other programs that we have here on Time for an Awakening. This evening, of course, is the Time for Awakening program with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard and other programs that we have. We try to be very progressive in terms of being African-centered to present these concepts and these ideas to our community. And one of the things that is most important to present to our community is the idea of doing for self. The idea of making sure that you are self-contained and your businesses and everything that you need is yours, you know? So, but I'm saying is that, you know, we don't have, and the model was Tulsa. That was the, more so than any other of the other communities that we had mentioned earlier, like, you know, Rosewood and so forth. The model was Tulsa. But because we are in an environment that is not ours, that's just like in the Republic of New Africa, where brothers and sisters are talking about getting five states in the South, you know, you cannot live with an open, sworn enemy, which they are. You cannot live with them. You will not be able to be independent. You will not be able to be sovereign and self-contained in this environment. It's not going to happen. But if you just are happy with whatever you can get and you got a good job, you got a good home, you live in a subdivision where there's black folks there and y'all all happy about that, you got nice homes and beautiful lawns and beautiful interiors, fine. I advocate for the future of African people, and it sure the hell ain't with crackers. Because if you're talking about the future for African people, it's on the continent with African people running their show. African people controlling the land, controlling the resources, building with one another. But you and I both know at this very moment, the idiocy of African leadership or misleadership is so It's so prevalent. It is sickening. It is sickening. But everywhere on this planet, Dr. Clark was right. I think Jay mentioned it. We have no friends. We have no friends. You want a friend? Look in the mirror. And don't leave that damn mirror to you. Like what you see. I ain't talking about your arched eyebrows or the cleft in your chin. I'm talking about who you see historically, who you see culturally, your beautiful melanated skin. Or hell, even if you light skin like me, I don't give a damn. But love who you are and love us. You know, there will never be the compensation. It is sad. All those many decades after 1921, where those brothers and sisters felt that some way, somehow, justice would prevail. We go to church all the time and pray and so forth. Justice would prevail. We were done such a grievous wrong. Many killed, over 300 killed. They found, they're excavating mass graves as we speak in certain areas of Tulsa. In one particular area, they excavated the grave and they opened the box up and find four or five people inside. Mass graves. We will never, never, just like the mass graves they found in New York, just like what they did to create Central Park. Never. They have eminent domain. Not even Caucasians can declare themselves sovereign. Not even Caucasians. Oh man, thanks, Brother Ralph. I love Brother Ralph. You know I love Brother Ralph. But he just said Asians are buying it up. Damn. You know, it's just like us lifting us. We had a cafe here. No way in hell we should not have been able to maintain that cafe and expand on it with others, because we're supposed to be a collective. We're supposed to be Ujamaa, cooperative economics, spending money with each other. What happened? We didn't support it. We didn't support it. It's the same thing in Philadelphia. Reverend Dr. Leon Sullivan is rolling over in his grave. Brother Akil, you got any closing remarks,
yes,
man? Yes, go ahead.
I think we had another caller. I can defer to the caller.
Okay, go ahead. Where's the caller? Hey, what's the number? Hit star twice. Hit star twice.
410.
Pardon?
Ayana, there. Ayana, are you there?
Hit star twice, and you can. What are the first three numbers?
Okay, sure. Hello.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. Yes. Okay, go ahead. Yes.
Hi. Hello.
Hello. How are you? All right.
I'm well. Hey, bro. Hey, Akil. I'm one of his little sisters. Happy to be here. Happy to be listening in.
Thank you.
It's been a really interesting conversation. And my brain has gone to so many different places throughout the conversation. But I wanted to, I know you said that you're at the end of the show right now.
Yes.
But I wanted to bring in some thoughts that I was having that is kind of pivoting from the main topic that we're talking about right now, but it's still very much so relevant. Like, I work in the entertainment industry, so that is like kind of where my brain lives at all times when thinking about these types of things. And when we're talking, it's always interesting to me because, like, when we're talking about, like, how people are so blind, like the brother that was on earlier who was saying, like, how so many Black people are so blind to what is going on, how we're being played, basically, how, like, we've been played for so many years, and, like, we don't even see it for ourselves. And then I look at shows that are on TV right now, right? Like, we have like Lovecraft Country and Watchmen that were both on HBO. I don't know if either one of you watched either one of those shows, but they both deal with the riots, the Tulsa Massacre.
Right.
And it's so interesting because, like, the show Watchmen, have either one of you seen that show?
Yes.
I have heard of it.
Okay, so like in that show, we see, like, and this is Hollywood, right? This is HBO. Like, we see these, like, going back to the idea of like the dangerous white ally. Like, we see these white people who are pretending basically to be allies and to be like all about the peace and harmony of the community, and this is like a reimagined future, right? Like, this is a future where Black people have gotten their reparations from the massacre, and, like, you know, like, we think everything is fine and dandy. You see Black people all over all of the ads, and they're the main characters on the shows, and you know what I mean, and, like, they're like leading all of the things. So but we see in the show, like, the white people double dealing there. Like, you think that they're an ally, but actually they're like one of the main chapters of the KKK, like things like that. So I don't know. It's like, it's hard for me to place things like that. Like, how, I know Hollywood is not to be trusted, right? Like, but then when we see these things playing out on TV in front of us, and we see these stories being told that are saying these, like, very similar, it's not the exact same things that y'all have been talking about for the, you know, this past hour. It's like, where do we place that? What do I trust that? Do I not trust that? Like, where do shows like that fall in?
That's
in
the entertainment. That's
about all, how to move forward.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's entertainment, but of course, it's working on your mind. And in fact, even with Lovecraft, you know, the bottom line is this is theirs, not ours. And everything that's in it is there to facilitate and maintain and sustain the privilege that they created for themselves. Okay. One thing you must know about the European is history has shown you, Malcolm said it best, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. And when you look at the history, From the beginning, they've always been a very selfish, a very greedy, a very mean-spirited people. From the time we first dealt with them during the Greek to the Romans, after the so-called medieval age or their Renaissance period to this present day. That's how it is. And their mindset is we may war amongst ourselves, and they do because they are very war-monging people. But we're going to always come together on those who are outside of us, who are outside of Caucasians, because we, you know, because we must maintain this situation, you know. And unfortunately, we believe because of we're a humane people, we're a very giving people. Just like Sheikh Anta Job said there was a two cradle theory of human development. The southern cradle and the northern cradle. They're the northern cradle. We're the southern cradle. And we were embracing. We were xenophilic. They're xenophobic. We were embracing people. We always believed that to our detriment. And so as a consequence, we're in the position we are today because we consistently believe that they will, just as the stuff that they put on paper, just as Jay asked me, the brother from New York just asked me, said, why we keep falling for it? Because we're trained by them. We're trained to believe this stuff. Well, you know what, y'all? I got to go. My time is up. I appreciate the call, sister. Please listen and call again. Brother Kill.
Yes, brother. Yana, thanks for calling in, sis.
Thanks for calling in, my sister.
Yeah.
All right. And Brother Kill, I know we'll be back on. Oh, next week, Friday, I'm going to have Brother Bashir. Muhammad Akinyele, out of Newark, educator out of Newark. And we finally got the brother we supposed to have been on about a month ago. That didn't happen. And so we're going to have him on next week. And I'm quite sure we're going to have a very good conversation once again. You know, and Brother Akil, I'm glad that I don't know if you're glad you're off on Fridays, but I'm glad you're off on Fridays because I do enjoy having you with me, man. And bringing up good conversation. So I look forward to our next conversation. Okay.
I definitely appreciate these discussions. You know, and there's going to be, and in terms of, you know, definitely I want to recommend to people, encourage people to do their own research and their own due diligence on Tulsa, on Greenwood, on Little Africa, and on the events that took place in 1921. There's supposed to be a new movie or documentary coming out produced by NBA star Russell Westbrook. I don't know who else is involved in it, but you know, it's always important to have already done our research,
right on,
so that, you know, when we see something in the media, in the mainstream media, we can, you know, be careful. We can kind of, like, you know, chew up the meat and spit out the bones.
Well, let me say this, having been to Tulsa, and I'm glad many of you are still staying on. I appreciate that. I had an opportunity to go to a school, and in Tulsa, and they teach the Tulsa Massacre. In the school, there are streets named Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. They teach it, and they teach it from our perspective. They ain't watering it down, because one thing for sure, prior to that, it was not discussed at all. Many of the people who were in Tulsa didn't know it happened. Living in Tulsa didn't know what happened. If they were born in the 40s and 50s or 60s, they didn't know what happened. They didn't, you know. So once again, we have to teach it from our perspective. And believe me, you know, don't sugarcoat nothing. Give it to them straight, no damn chaser, because that's what it deserves. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a great and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family. You have a great weekend.